Hello and welcome to the Vorthos cast. I'm Lorelei Weissel-Labrizzi.
And I'm Chris Delano.
And we have another fun interview episode this week. We have Natalie and Harless from the Magic Story podcast, the big fancy official one over on the Mothership. Hello, Natalie, and hello, Harless.
Hello.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks a bunch for coming on the show. We've been kind of ship sailing in the same harbor, Vorthos-wise, for how long have you all been doing the podcast now? It's been a couple years.
It's been almost 1 year. It feels like it's our anniversary.
Yeah.
It feels like it's been forever. And I think that's because we started with the Phyrexian arc.
Uh-huh.
Which was, I think we can all agree, it was a very big storyline in terms of obviously what happened, but also in terms of those stories were very long, right? Like they're longer than mm-hmm. a typical magic story. And so for us, it also feels like it has been longer than a year.
The time displacement of working on magic things, which happens before sets come out, also is maybe affecting my memory because I wrote for March of the Machine. So in my brain, March of the Machine was 2 years ago and not 1 year ago. Great. So for folks out there who maybe haven't listened to the Magic Story podcast yet, let's talk a little bit about what you do otherwise inside Wizards, kind of who you are, what you do for Magic, and how you got involved with the start of the podcast. So I guess we'll start with Natalie.
Yeah. Hey, y'all. This is Natalie over at Wizards of the Coast, and I work on the Magic team, obviously. My official title is Game Producer, and my job is pretty cool. I mean, any job where you get to work on magic is cool, but I actually help keep the big picture of the magic portfolio kind of running. So I get to work on every single set that we do from inception all the way to the release. And my job is to track its progress, like from team to team. And I am also obviously a Vorthos nerd, like story and lore is kind of where my heart and soul is, the foundation as to why I love working on magic so much. So in addition to basically being in the air traffic control tower for the Magic mm-hmm. portfolio, I am also the co-host for the Magic Story podcast. And my other host is Harless here with me.
Yeah, so my story in Wizards is a little unique. I actually started off on the product strategy team alongside Natalie. So Natalie and I worked very closely together for a long time I was a product marketing manager at the time. So my job was essentially taking this very complex thing that is a magic set and making it kind of human readable. And my background is actually in tech, so that's not new to me, right? Taking something that is really complex and making people be able to actually understand, right, like what's going on and what we're trying to do with it. So I did that for a couple of years. And then I actually moved over to what's called the emerging business team, which is where we bring partners on. And that was, I guess, as you can probably assume, around the time we started working with external partners for Universes Beyond.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm in my third role at Wizards, which is I work on the events team specifically for Universes Beyond. So I work with an amazing team of people who brings MagicCon to life. If you've never been to a MagicCon, couldn't recommend it more. I always say it feels like it's us trying to give a hug to the community, but the community just gives us a hug right back at MagicCon. And what I do specifically is work on Universes Beyond and bringing that to life through activations. Just recently in Chicago, we did a Fallout scavenger hunt, a photo opportunity, along with all the clue activations that we did, like the after party, the kind of dinner party that we did as well. So yeah, I've done a lot at Wizards, but ultimately, you know, Natalie and I, we kept saying the same thing to each other, which was, gosh, I just wish there was a way for me to just listen to the story, right? Mm-hmm. Just like, yes. Let me yes. be told. And I just want someone to, on my drive to work, tell me what's going on in this set. Because we're humans and we're busy. We're very busy humans, right? And so that's really, I'll let Natalie talk a little bit more about that. But that's really like where we got the idea to do this podcast was just hey, why aren't we like explaining what this story is in more ways than one, which is, mm-hmm. you know, at Wizards was just the web fiction. Why can't we explore what another format would look like?
So before we get into like the podcast starting, where did y'all, like, you both mentioned being big Vorthoses and liking the story. What got you into Magic Story? Like, what was your on-ramp into being a Vorthos?
Oh, it was a rabbit hole for me. So rewind, I had, like, Harless and I are both new into Magic and its lore, and meaning new within like the last 5 years or less. And so for me, I think it was rewind to 2019 timeframe. I am introduced to Magic for the very first time. And it kind of caught my attention at PAX initially. I was kind of like, oh, what's this card game that I've kind of heard about, but haven't really like dove into. And then someone kind of gifted me some Magic product. And I opened a card that had M20. I think it was the core set 2020 set. And mm-hmm. in that set, I saw this card, and it was the card Tezzeret. It was a planeswalker. And I was mm-hmm. so intrigued by this character. You know, like, imagine, you know, rewind, like, you have no context as to what this character is or why this character looks the way that they do. And then I just started doing research over, like, okay, and it's probably the most complicated character that I could start with, right, is Tezzeret. And I'm looking at, like, okay, why does Tezzeret look that way? And then I'm like, what is a planar bridge? And I wanted to know more about why he has this power that he does. And so it just led me from one to the next, and it was kind of this pinball. Like, imagine me as a pinball, like, in going through the machine of trying to figure out who this character is and how he's related to this bigger thing called the multiverse and why he is a planeswalker and what that means. And it just, I was so sucked in right away, just out of curiosity. And that's kind of where I went. It all started with Tezzeret. That's the North Star for me.
Tezzeret looks so cool, and then you go read about him, and you're like, oh wow, this guy loses every time.
Yes.
Yeah, for me, it was a little bit different. I was very honest in my interview for Magic, and I said, I'm a D&D girly, okay? I do not play Magic, because my history of Magic was, well, okay, so I actually have a pretty funny story as to my very first interaction with Magic, which is that I was like 6, I want to say, and my stepbrother, who was quite a bit older than me, would, like, you know, always want me to do what he wanted to do, and what I wanted to do was little kid stuff, right? I'm 6, he's like, mm-hmm. you know, like 12. And so his way of manipulating me was very mean. He would show me Magic cards with like typically a black mana card with like a demon on it, or like, you know, just some horrible monster, and be like, this is gonna come for you if you're not gonna do what I want you to do. And I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. This Magic card's gonna come to life and kill me. And beyond that, like, I had really tried to get into Magic in high school. I had a lot of friends that played Magic. And it was always like, oh, this is so much to explain, right? Like, I don't know. So, like, I had always, like, been interested in Magic, but I had never actually sat down and played. So I get the job, and I'm like, well, I better figure out what's what and what's going on. And I actually found Throne of Eldraine, which I was like, this is for me, right? Like, I know that's mm-hmm. basic. I don't care. I very much was like, high fantasy characters that I can see myself as. This is great. And then, but the first story that I actually dug into and read beyond the world building was Midnight Hunt. Mm-hmm. And I just really fell in love with Arlen and Arlen's story and Arlen's, you know, struggle with being both human and monster. Mm-hmm. And I found that just really compelling and really just relatable in a lot of ways, right? I'm not a monster, I promise, but we all have things in our lives, our pasts, our brains that can make us feel other. And just to see this, like, really high, like, this fantasy with monsters, and it's super accessible because it's gothic horror and I love gothic horror, but then seeing these real human stories, I was just like, wow, this is way better than I expected it to be frank, right? Like, I for like a card game, right? Mm. This is a really cool story. And I just, like Natalie, I went down a rabbit hole and I was like, well, who's Avacyn? I want to know more about Avacyn. And, you know, I just kind of kept going in that direction.
I think that is maybe one of the highest compliments you could possibly pay to Kay's work, is that it made you interested in learning about Avacyn. No, that is one of my favorite things that Kay does is as a magic author is really dig into pithy emotional beats. The one she hits with Arlen in those stories are excellent, and Soren gets some really good stuff in the next set in Crimson Vow, and awesome, yeah. Great place to start.
Soren was part of it, right? Soren's just a hottie. I have yeah. a type, and that type is Soren. And that helped a lot. I was like, oh, who's this? Maybe I'll keep reading.
He's a sad, edgy boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one other thing that Kay did that is really a miracle of magic story is make people really like Soren.
He's so miserable, and I love hating him is what it is. Is I like seeing him miserable. Hate is not the word. I like when Soren is miserable. I love when bad things happen to him. He is, he's too well-meaning to be a poor little meow-meow, but he approaches that territory, and it's good for him.
I'm a sucker for a broody vampire boy. It is what it is.
So, the two of you, your friends, you're at Wizards, you both like Vorthos magic story. You mentioned just, like, you wanted another way to get magic story other than reading the web fiction. So what made you start working on the podcast? What made you, to be clear, bring the podcast out of a very long retirement? Because it existed years ago and then just fell into the abyss.
Yeah, this is kind of a long story. I apologize, I'm long-winded. So I'm gonna try and do this like the most summarized version that I've possibly can. Mm-hmm. It's just, I described my journey in trying to understand magic story as kind of feeling like I'm in a pinball machine. No, yeah. And I really related to kind of how there was no clear start here. You know, I mm-hmm. really wanted, you know, I wanted a place where I could be like, just tell me where to start. Because I was trying to go through all of this, so much out there. There's so much to read. There's so much web fiction. You can go as far back into actually reading the books that are out there. But there was no map that told me, okay, but start here. This will explain who these characters are, and these will explain what the concepts are. And you know, I found my way eventually, but I really understood the barrier to entry into magic lore because I personally went through it. And so when I started working at Wizards and started really diving into this amazing game and finding more and more, like just diving in deeper into the lore, I never forgot what it felt like to be that brand new Vorthos, like trying to learn everything I possibly could and completely out of order. I felt like I learned everything out of order. And I realized that there's so many facts out there, but nothing helped me to understand. And the kind of some context, when I first started at Wizards, this is 2019, so this was just before the COVID lockdowns, I had an insane commute to the office pre-pandemic. Like I was mm-hmm. probably commuting to the Wizards office 90 minutes one way from one side of Seattle to the other. And I did that twice a day. So I was spending upwards of 3 hours of my day stuck in the car with nothing better to do than think about magic. And I was just reminiscing, like wishing for a voice that I could listen to while I drove that would summarize the story for me, but also give me the context as to what's happening and why it's happening that way. And like, it just, a playlist started formulating in my head where it's like, okay, start here, episode one, that would illuminate the complex lore and like picture that is magic story without like, and just, but tell me the story along with it. And that was the mm-hmm. premise sort of the Magic Story podcast, this idea of like a start here for brand new Vorthos out there, kind of stuck in traffic like me, just wanting to understand and maybe doesn't have the time to read hours and hours worth of web fiction, or maybe doesn't even know where to start on that web fiction, because seriously, which set do you start with? And that's like, where's the context and understanding going to happen about the major characters and the significant events of the multiverse and how the multiverse even works and what a planeswalker is, or was and why they're going away. Like, I wanted the story and I wanted that context too. And so that was the culmination of it. Like, it was the Cliff Notes version of Magic Story. It was long-winded. I tried to keep it as short as I could. Sorry.
I think that's so accurate, Natalie. And I think, like, for me on my end, it was really like, I have a marketing background. And to me, I was going, where are we just explaining the really basic stuff, right? Like, there's not necessarily a landing page that says, like, here's Liliana, and this is why you should care, right? There are very in-depth articles about Liliana, but, like, what if I just want to know the basics, right? And I think that's what's different about our podcast from a lot of other podcasts is that we're in no way dumbing it down for you, but we are starting at zero with you. And we're going, This is the first time we're seeing this character on the podcast. So we're going to tell you what this character looks like. The most basic of backgrounds, not like, I think Karn is such a good example. Like, when we were talking about Karn, when we were introducing Karn, we could have spent whole episodes on Karn, right? Like, yeah, there could be a whole podcast on just Karn, I think. But we were like, what do you need to know to understand this story and understand the, like, I think Karn has a little self-loathing, right? And I think
a little.
Oh, just a little bit. Just a skosh.
Just a little.
And I think you had to know that to understand why. You know, in one of our first episodes, Natalie really goes on and she's like, Karn, you are a terrible mountaineer. You're supposed to tell people where you're going. This is the first rule of going out on your own, is you tell someone where you go. But, like, it's important, if you understand a little bit about Karn's history, you can understand why Karn did not tell anybody where Karn was going. And Karn has an ego, and Karn is like, I'm not human. I don't need food and to breathe and all this other stuff. And so, like, why would I tell someone? Like, it's a complex answer. But we wanted to give it to you in as simple of a way as possible.
God, now I want to do a whole Karn podcast. The Pod Karn or the Karn cast. I don't know.
Karn.
Because, like, I love Karn, and just, like, his whole, everything about Karn is all, like, generational trauma and inherited sin and, like, failures built upon failures, and, he's the only one in this big line all the way back to Glacian who, like, gives a damn about trying to fix things. Yeah. And that's just this huge weight on his shoulders. Thankfully, he's very large and very sturdy and very strong.
Big shoulders.
Yeah. And yeah, he's great. But yeah, how do you explain Karn is tricky. We have spent, like, literally entire podcast episodes just talking about, like, the Time Streams novel for background stuff. It's a lot. There's so many novels worth of information.
Yeah, and that's so true, right? Like, there's not just the web fiction. There's literal novels that you have to go hunt down and purchase and wait to get to your house. And so it was really, like, Natalie and I just going, what if we just started here?
Mm-hmm.
What if we just start where we're at? What if we don't go way back?
Yeah, it's the comic book problem of, like, well, where do you start when you're reading comic books? And the answer is wherever your interests may take you. And sometimes that is a current active run. Sometimes it's something that was published 40 years ago. And then you get very confused because comics are all interconnected and they're referencing things that you don't know about. And Magic Story faces a lot of those same issues.
Mm-hmm.
So having a podcast like yours that kind of, starting at zero, here's Magic Story, is really neat. One of the things that you've started doing is to kind of supplement this is kind of audiobook versions of the stories themselves. So how did those get started?
I said, why aren't we doing this?
And then you did it.
Essentially, yeah. No, truly. Yeah. It really was just, so Arena had done, Natalie and I had been thinking about this and talking about this for what, like months, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And the arena team did like a little teaser where they read part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran, not walked, over to them and was like, let me help. You know, like, uh-huh. I want to do this. I have a theater background. I did theater from 14 to 24. And I just, as I said, I'm a D&D girly. And if you think all of my D&D characters do not have their own unique voice, you are incorrect. And I thought it would be fun. I thought it would be a cool challenge for my performance skills. But I also just mm-hmm. thought, our fans deserve to listen to it this way. It's more accessible to not only people with, you know, who don't necessarily want to use like a visual, like a reader software to like read it mm-hmm. to you if you have like vision issues, but also if you're a mom and you are busy and you don't have time to sit down and read it. Like I'm a huge audiobook person. My husband and I both are. There's constantly an audiobook playing in our house, and it just made so much sense. It made too much sense not to do it. And then we thought, well, if we're going to kind of own this, why don't we put it on our podcast? And why don't we let people listen to it that way so that it's mm-hmm. not just, hey, we're going to recap this for you, but hey, why don't you listen to the whole story first? And then we'll tell you mm-hmm. the stuff you missed or that you may not have connected.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny, Harless, that you mentioned having been a theater person and then also considering the accessibility of these stories, because I went to school for theater and now my full-time career is in accessibility. And so audio versions of the stories were definitely something I was like, why aren't they doing this for like years? I was like, we really need this. But I didn't ever do it myself. And I'm glad that someone has taken up the mantle and done it though, because it's really important for people.
If you look at the YouTube videos, mm-hmm. they have crazy high views, right? Like mm-hmm. oh, yeah. I was shocked. Like when we released the first story, Wilds of Eldraine, which I believe was called Pure of Heart, that video has like 70,000 views or something crazy like that. And like when we read the comments, almost every comment is just thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wild. It almost made me cry, to be honest, because I was just like, okay, I wasn't wrong. Like people really do want this.
Yeah, for a number of years there were I think two main fan groups that were doing recorded readings that had trailed off at some point. I think maybe a year or two before y'all started doing them. And it was something that the Vorthos community that we had seen from our end had kind of disappeared and people still wanted. So when you two started doing the readings of the stories, we were like, hey, this is great. People should check this out. This is the thing that, you know, you've been missing and been wanting. It's here again. And it's great to hear that they've been popular and successful. And a lot of people have talked about how they've been helpful. You know, we have definitely heard feedback on our end that it's something that's greatly appreciated.
Oh, that's great to hear. I love hearing that. I had someone come up to me at MagicCon, and I'm just doing my job. I'm like walking the floor and making sure everything's how it's supposed to be. And this person comes up to me and they're like, hey, I want to know how to do this thing. And I said, well, go to the info booth. And they were like, where's the info booth? And I was like, well, I'll just walk you. Let's go. And as soon as I don't know what it was about that sentence, they look at me and they go, oh, are you Harless? I know your voice. And I was like, yeah, that's me. And I mean, it just made my day. And then they went on to tell me like they listened to it with their child and that's what got their child into magic. And I was just like, what? That's
hell yeah.
Y'all gonna make me cry at a MagicCon? Like for real? Sorry, Natalie, you were gonna say something.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I do not have a theater background, but I was a teacher for many years, so I am used to using mm-hmm. my voice. But these dramatic readings, the audiobooks, have been kind of a nice challenge for me, and it's kind of nice to be able to just slow down and read the story and to be able to give voice to these characters. Mm-hmm. I have had an absolute blast doing these audiobooks, and so it's kind of nice to do something that you yourself are incredibly passionate about doing, and it also just gives so much joy out there, as Harless is kind of explaining the stories of hearing about our fans and hearing about how much it gives back. It's such a joy to be able to work on these. And so it's always nice to hear that it is appreciated.
I will say I read all the stories in text when they come out, and then typically y'all's audio version comes out like a little while after the story comes out. And then I get to listen to it again. And it's just really nice, like reading it and then also hearing it. It really, like, I did all of that with the Lost Caverns of Ixalan stories, as I would read them and then listen to them. And then it was just really a great experience to have both ways, honestly. Made me really appreciate the stories even more than I already was.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because the stories that I read, I'm like, okay, I did that. I don't need to listen to it again. I don't need to hear my voice that much, right? But when with LCI in particular, because it was very important to us to let the set about like Mesoamerica be spoken about by people who understand that culture better than two white girls can, right? It was so cool because we put out a call and we were like, hey, if you are, like, especially if you're a native Spanish speaker, because there's so many words in that set that, you know, are like Spanish influenced or just straight up Spanish. And we put out a call and we said, if you are comfortable speaking this language, like, we would love to have you come and be on the podcast and represent that and speak to the story that had so much love and heart and soul put into it. And if you listen to a video Cartagena and Miguel Lopez talk about the set, like, they, along with Deborah Garcia, one of the art directors, I mean, they put their whole like cultural experiences into the set. And we didn't want to take away from that. We wanted it to be additive. And I'm so happy with how they each came out. And it was so much fun working with each of the readers individually. So every story was read by someone different. And it was a little challenging, right, to be like, okay, here's how you use the podcast equipment and here's how you use the software. And, you know, it took a lot of time and of extra time to set people up for success with this. But I'm so glad we did, because to your point, when I was listening back to them, because I listened to all of those after I read the text, I would pick up on things that I missed the first time. You know, like, typically we read the story a couple times before we record it. But even just hearing someone that wasn't me reading them, you really get something else out of it, or they'll hit on an emotional note that you just glossed over or didn't hit you as hard the first time. And it really does make a difference. Like, you know, you read things in your own reading voice in your head, and we each have our own unique little reading voice in our head, but hearing someone else read it is like, I don't know, it just unlocks things in the story that you were like, oh, wait a minute. And that happens when we're scripting too. Like, Natalie primarily does the scripts for our podcast, and Natalie will put something together and I'll go, what? how did I, yeah. Did we read the same story? And then I'll go back and read it and be like, oh my gosh, or vice versa. Like, I'll say like, wait a minute, and we always talk about it on the podcast. Like, I actually read it this way and I think it's this. And that's just really fun and interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an art piece ultimately, right? And art can be interpreted many, many different ways. And so it's always really cool to see the different takes that even just the two of us have on these stories.
Yeah, table reads are important.
That happens all the time with us on the podcast too, because we also provide like story summaries. Ours are less scripted than yours, I feel.
No, ours are not scripted. Well, I guess the summaries are a little scripted. Yeah.
I was going to say, so typically, like, we trade off and whoever has free time will, like, write up a quick little, like, bullet point summary of the story when we're talking about it. And there have definitely been times we've been on the podcast where even, like, you know, we've talked about something. And even Jay, who, like, works on these stories way ahead of time, is like, oh, did that happen? I missed that. Or, like, someone on the podcast will just be like, oh, I totally didn't catch that because one of the other members of the podcast caught it. And so it's like turning storytelling into a collaborative, experience makes it so that we catch a lot of things that we otherwise missed.
100%. Yeah. Total same experience.
Yeah, I think. Go ahead, Nat. Go ahead, Harless. Sorry.
No, I feel like I'm talking so much. Please go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's like some of my favorite moments on the podcast is when is like during those table reads and when Harless and I are actually kind of going off script a little bit. Like we will script, you know, 90% of what we talk about, but there is much that we just kind of do in the moment, and a lot of it is when Harless and I almost will disagree on something. And so like it brings me back to where it's like our very first season, we're talking about Karn, and like Harless immediately was on pro Karn, and I was immediately on like not necessarily anti Karn, but I was just like, I don't get what's going on with this guy. Like
I was irritated with Karn.
I was so irritated.
You were irritated with his decisions.
And that just like, and we're reading the exact same story, you know, it's the exact same character, but it kind of illuminates in the moment how much it can relate to different people out there and different things that vibe with you. And there's really something for everybody in Magic Story. Like there's going to be a character out there that you vibe with, and there's going to be a character out there that you just don't. And that's kind of the beauty of having such a widespread story across so many different planes and events and characters through which there's going to be something that connects you, and everybody's going to read it differently. And it resonates that you said it's an art piece, Harless, because it really is. And both of our backgrounds are in literature. And so we get to kind of do a little bit of literature analysis along with it and just kind of read in between the lines and do speculations. And it's such a cool moment to be able to unpack that in different ways.
To speak to that a second, what Natalie's talking about is our school experience, right? So Natalie actually studied literature in college, and I briefly went to college for poetry. It's the most useful of the degrees. I use it a lot.
As a person with a film studies degree, not even like production work, but I have a lit degree for film, equally useless.
I'm sorry, but I have a Bachelor of Arts in theater with a minor in poetry, so...
We could take over the world, y'all.
I was going to say earlier, I think one of the greatest things about Magic Story is just that, like, I mean, it's been around for 30 years, and it's had so many hands who have touched it. Every author brings their own unique perspective, their own unique writing style to it. I was just having a conversation. We're having a special guest on soon, and I was talking to him about it. And I was like, he was like, I didn't know anything about magic before I started writing. And I was like, honestly, some of the best magic writers have gone into it knowing nothing about magic. They're just incredible writers. One fun thing we did over this like long content drought of Magic Story during Lord of the Rings, you know, because Lord of the Rings had its own whole, you know, novel set out.
I kind of have a story already. Yeah.
You may have heard of it. We recorded some episodes where we went back in time and looked at older Magic Story, and we looked at like these sort of forgotten pieces of magic from years ago. And we sat down and we like really talked about these stories in depth. And so like I was using that college experience I had taking the literature classes I took and like sitting down and like taking notes, reading this story about like minotaurs, and like going, all right, how do I, yeah, how do we sit down and have this conversation about like the complexities of family trauma and like, you know, things like that. And we're talking about a story about, you know, magic and minotaurs, and like it was just so like, I don't want to say eye-opening, because I've always respected Magic Story, but it was a situation where I was like, if people sat there and did this with Magic Story, they would realize like, oh, this is, sorry for my language, this is some good shit, like this
it's crazy that it is there, you know, like the human, we're talking about a multiverse that has portals through different planes, and some of these planes are completely out there, and that it has a giant world tree that can like you know, it's so fantastical, and yet there are true moments of actual genuine humanness in so many of these events that it is so relatable, you know, and I can't tell you how many times Heartless and I have had those moments on the podcast where we're having real human relatable moments, because it is ultimately a story about, you know, a coming of age story, or it is a love story, or it is someone who's trying to find themselves and be able to save the multiverse when they think they can't. You know, it's like there's so many relatable pieces to it. And it's, yeah, I'm with you. I've always respected stories that can do that. And one of my favorite pieces about Magic Story in particular is that it is relatable, even though we're talking about a, you know, a Chandra who can, you know, spew fireballs. Like, she's still such a relatable character, and it's because of the writers who do that, who bring it to life.
Yeah. Kira got me real bad with Kellen.
Got everyone with Kellen.
I open up about this in an upcoming episode of our podcast a little bit. I usually don't talk about personal stuff on the podcast. We try to keep it just to the story, but I did not meet my dad until I was 18. And like, Kellen looking for Oko was like, oh no, I'm about to confront some stuff. Like, I'm about to read these stories, assess these stories, and then how do I not go through my own emotional journey alongside Kellen as Kellen thinks, you know, I'm other, I don't belong anywhere, am I going to belong ever, and will this person that is such a huge part of my life want me in theirs? And like, that's wild. We're talking about a half fae who can fly.
Yeah.
yeah. And it's a father and son story beneath it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully your meeting went a little bit better than Kellen's is going.
My meeting went great. My dad and I are very good friends. My dad is awesome. And it's wild because, I don't know, like you meet this person who gave you part of your genetics, and like, we have the same laugh, which was wild to me, because like, I'd never heard his laugh in real life. Mm-hmm. And then I have the same laugh. Like, we have this very obnoxious laugh, both of us, when we're really tickled, and we have the same sense of humor. We walk the same, we have the same gait, and you're like, whoa, that's weird. It's just like bizarre. It's bizarre world. But no, my dad is fantastic, and I'm so great. He's grateful he's in my life now.
I was going to say, shout out to the first time Magic Story ever made me cry in the appropriately titled A Cry of Magic from Strixhaven, the Rutha story by Aisha Yufara. When I was working on the creative text for Strixhaven, Rutha, of the five kids, Rutha is the one I got most attached to. A lot of her story of struggling with creating art reminded me a lot of my own collegiate experiences writing. And so the flavor text on her card, "Art is never finished, merely abandoned," is a kind of a paraphrasing of advice one of my professors had given me in one of my writing classes. This was actually a poetry class. The professor was telling an anecdote about a friend who was a poet, who like had a poem that he was working on that he really liked, and so he kept asking his friend, hey, you know, you've been working on this poem for like years, when is it gonna be finished? And the guy's like, I it's gonna be done soon, I think. And then I think it's finished, maybe now. And then a week later was like, okay, it's not done. I had to remove a comma. and like, at some point, you just have to stop creating and put your art out into the world. Yes. Like, that hit me really hard as someone who struggles a lot with, I don't like to say perfectionism, but it's perfectionism.
But it's perfectionism. Like,
yeah. It's hard to let work go like that, because there's always something you can iterate better. And if you just had more time, you could make it better. But like, sometimes you have to let it go. And so I really connected with this character and, you know, put a lot of myself into my work on the set. And then this story gets published. This damn story gets published and just like hits me like critical hits in all the places where I emotionally struggled in college. Yeah. And just like completely paralleled all my experiences, and I'm sitting here reading like her interactions with Yuvilda and Asari and struggling to make art, like sobbing. because this goofy, fantastical orc college student can't make magical art good.
All right, please, Ben.
Yeah. No, that's the same. And it's just sometimes magic story just hits really, really, really good and it's really nice.
Yeah. Big time. Big time. I had to re-record the ending of Murders at Karlov Manor when Taysa comes back to talk to Kaya like three times because I kept crying. Like, my best friend is so important to me. We have this beautiful friendship that's been, oh my God, I think we've been friends for like 14 years. And the way that it was written just was like a true friendship, like how it would really feel. And it put me in that moment. And I was like thinking about my bestie. And I literally sitting in my room with my cat, just crying and being like, and then she said, okay, I got to retake that. That's not, that you can't understand what I'm saying at all. Like I literally had to do it like three times. And then the other one that got me, that surprised me, was the Vraska and Jace moment.
Oh God. And I think everyone cried.
Yeah.
The whole world cried.
That got me also. Allison is a good friend and we have very similar tastes and I love Allison's work and she's very good at punching me in the heart. Which is like the nicest artistic comment. Yeah. It's like the nicest artistic comment I can give someone.
Yeah,
you punched me right in the heart.
I think the scene that I, out of all of the episodes that we have recorded so far on the podcast, and we've been doing this for, we're in the eighth season now, so we've been doing eight sets that's counting Outlaws of Thunder Junction. I think it was a side story in March of the Machine. It was written by Allison Lurs, and the very, very talented Allison. And it's the one where we're behind Vraska's eyes after she has been Phyrexianized and she returns to Ravnica. It's just absolutely brilliant in the way that it was written, first and foremost, over the fact that the font was literally different as she fought between her real self and her Phyrexianized self. And we saw the two in her inner monologue, like literally fighting from one sentence to another. And I think that's one of the scenes that really got me is being behind Vraska's eyes. And we know how that ends, you know, it's like Vraska, you know, doesn't make it through that scene. And it just, it really was so emotional to be able to read her inner monologue like that. And that there's that inner part of her just screaming and fighting against the Phyrexianization that was so powerful in her. And so I think if I could name a favorite scene that kind of punched me in the heart, I think back onto that particular story as well. And it's crazy that Harless and I both mentioned Vraska and that that's just up there in terms. And I wonder if it's, you know, the incredible writing of Allison Lurs that kind of really pulls that out.
What's crazy to me is that these are short stories, right? Like there's multiples of them, but they're short stories. And much like a poem, you don't have a lot of space to say what you're trying to say. So like, I always say that poetry is like 10% writing and 90% editing.
Yep.
Because
that's like really generous to the writing portion. I feel like it's probably like 5.95 maybe. Yeah,
exactly, right? Like you spend so much time being like, is this a but or an and? Or does this comma need, what is this comma really telling people? Or, you know, I could say it this way or this other way and the way that it flows is broken, but it feels more right. And, you know, there's a lot to it. And I feel like that has to be true with these short stories as well, because one of the things that I say so often in the podcast is that a throwaway line will make the whole story for me.
Yep.
Like there's this moment where Kaya's on Ravnica and she's back there for the first time after the Phyrexian invasion and it's home, but it no longer feels like home. And then she smells the coffee cart. And I was like, man, that is so cool, because how often does a smell make us feel like we're home, right? Like make us feel like you can never go back home or whatever is true, but you have these little moments where you can. And in that moment, I was like, Kaya literally smelled this like lavender latte and was like, I'm home. And I was like, man, I feel that. I feel that deeply. I'm Southern. So when I go home, I go to my dad's house and it smells like sweet tea and like bacon grease. And I'm like, yes, this is the stuff.
Speaking of Shannon McGuire, as of day of recording, we're recording this the day that her side story for Thunder Junction came out, A Pleasant Family Outing. Absolutely wonderful. But there's a line in like the very first few paragraphs where she wrote, most of this land is acrid and dry, but people have a way of creating softness wherever they go. And I'm like, in the story, this is about, you know, a grave. And it's like, but just, I read that line and it stopped me in my tracks while reading today, because I was just like, that is such a beautiful piece of written language. It's just like a gorgeous sentence in the middle of this story about a couple of like necromantic siblings who are about to, you know, make like a weird griffin hybrid zombie and go right off to fight a corpsipede. But like this one little line where I was like, oh God, that's just gorgeous. I wish I had written that.
Shannon is emotionally abusive. I love Shannon so much. And I agree. There's just so many, like, just one little line and you're like, you just colored the whole world, right? Uh-huh. With one little line. Or you just took this, you know, like Thunder Junction is a masculine place, right? Like it is. It's dry. It's tumbleweeds and sandstorms, and you know, it's not easy to live there, but and it is this, like, it could easily be this like dull, dusty, nonsensical place where you're just like, I don't want to go there. But then you'll get a line like that and you're like, oh, I want to go there. I want to be there. Like it turns it from dusty to like the colors of the canyons and the colors of the sunset, and it just, she really does just color the whole world in with her little, her pen, her crayon pen, mm-hmm. I'll call it.
God, there's so much good landscape art in this set. Not to like shift gears to art, but like I really cannot wait for, we're on the cusp of preview starting, and I'm really, the set is so pretty.
It's so pretty.
It's truly gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah, this episode of the podcast is going to come out the day before previews start, I believe. So
I think that's right.
Yeah, we have yet to see the official previews. I think everyone in this recording has seen previews, probably, because we have our preview coming out. But
the public, Chris, there is a preview panel.
There is a preview panel. That's true.
We have had cards preview.
Well, I mean, like the other cards, more things. We still haven't seen a lot of the set, and people are about to see a lot more. And I'm really excited for it, because it's so far incredibly good story, gorgeous art, incredible world building. It makes me excited for Magic Story. And I think every set for like the past like 6 years has made me so excited for Magic Story.
Yeah.
The art is just a whole other layer that brings it to life in such a vivid way where you really can't, your imagination can go wild. One of the things I love about Magic Story is that they leave a little bit to the imagination, and your imagination playground gets to run wild, because you're like, well, they talked about this character in like this very little moment, but like, what's their life like outside of this? You know, like, what's their day to day? I want to know. And it just, like, I find myself thinking about the multiverse way more than I should when I'm not working. Because exactly what you said, like, there's so many beautiful moments in it, and it really makes you want to be there. I was standing backstage during the preview panel at MagicCon Chicago, because I was about to host the Fallout preview, the Fallout panel. Mm-hmm. And which was an amazing experience, and I'm so happy that they let me do that. But I remember I'm standing back there, and we're kind of going over like one of the things that we're going to talk about, and I just hear the audience like gasp, and I look over, and it's a preview card for Outlaws of Thunder Junction. I was like, yes, like they see what I see. They love it as much as I love it. And like for Natalie and I both, you know, I was born in Tennessee, and I lived there until I was 20, redacted. And then I moved to to Texas and lived there for 10 years until I was redacted. And then I moved up to Seattle. And Natalie is, she grew up in Colorado and then she taught in Texas yep. for a while. So this set is like so near and dear to mm-hmm. both of us. And it's so yeah. cool to see a fantasy Western world in this way. Like, it's so unique. It's so different than anything I've really come across before. It really feels so fresh, like a fresh take on something. And it's twisted it into this really beautiful thing when oftentimes, you know, Wild West gets twisted so dark and so brutal and so masculine. And I feel like this really allows that Wild West trope to breathe and the authors really breathes new life into it. It's not just the same old thing that you're used to seeing.
Shout out to
that term.
Yeah, shout out to Isaac Fellman for writing the story about Yuma, wherein a bar fight is one of the most emotional experiences you've ever read. But we're going to talk more about that later in another episode. But just like wild to see a Wild West story where you're just like emotionally devastated by like a shootout. it's great.
Yeah, like in a movie, that's just like pew pew the end, right? Like, oh mm-hmm. no, a character I like is gone, or a character I like triumphed. But here, yeah, it's so much deeper than that, and you get more out of it. And like, you know, my dad is such an old cowboy, and they are soft, right? Like my dad loves like so hard and so big, and it's like, you know, sometimes hidden behind that like tough cowboy exterior where he's like, you know. Got his hat and his boots on and he's riding the tractor in the backyard. I'm from the country, y'all. you know, there is such a softness to him as well. And that gets like hidden or dusted under the rug so often. And it's really so beautiful to see that play out in a different way in the story.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're ending our recording time or getting close to it. Typically, when we start approaching the end, we do our final thoughts. But first, I want to give you all a chance to like shout out your magic, the official Magic Story podcast. We're the unofficial ones over here. We have no, you know, legal rights to be it. But if you want to give a shout out to your podcast, tell us what we can expect, maybe when we can expect some episodes and things like that.
You want to take that, Natalie?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, the Magic Story podcast we are about to release the premiere of season 8, which is Outlaws of Thunder Junction, that actually drops on Monday, the audiobook version. And then our episode 1 recap actually drops next Tuesday. And I'm so excited for you all to hear our recaps and our takeaways with me and Harless going through Thunder Junction and following our one of our favorite characters, Kellen, as he reunites with his father and or maybe not in the way that he plans it to be that way. it's an awesome, awesome story that I'm really excited that is right around the corner for you all.
You can also listen to us on YouTube, on the Magic official YouTube. You can find some of our narrations, and you're welcome in advance. I refrained from using a country accent the entire time, but it was really hard because the way that it's written, you know, I code switch a lot. Like when I'm home, my accent is full on there. I say things like right here and hey, you're going to turn right up at that corner there. Like I just say words that are not in my vernacular normally. And this is written so like well in that country style that it was so hard for me not to slip into it. Like I had to re-record so many takes because I was like, I'm country again. It's happening. So you're welcome in advance for not making you listen to my Tennessee accent for several hours.
It was amazing though.
This episode of the Vorthos cast is coming out, I guess, the same day that the first episode of your Outlaws of Thunder Junction season is premiering. So once you finish listening to our episode, go hop over and I think we can find your podcast in pretty much any podcast app that's out there. With ours.
Right. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. We're on pretty much every platform.
Yep. All right. So now the last thing we do on an episode is our final thoughts. These don't have to be related at all to Magic the Gathering. They can be. They don't have to be. We just say whatever we're thinking about this week. Lorelai, do you have a final thought you want to share?
I didn't have one planned. I almost never do. So this is the part where I just talk and stall until I can think of something. But unfortunately, I don't really have one. I finally got around to reading the Fire and Ice Welcome to Smallville miniseries that DC put out the last 6 months. Really delightful, adorable. I love Fire and Ice. They're such messes. A lot of great, like, D-list characters show up. It was an adorable little miniseries. If you want just, like, a fun, low-stakes, wild romp where a lot of silly, goofy comic book stuff happens and some, like, good emotional drama happens, definitely recommend picking up that series. Also, girls kiss in it, which is nice.
Well, my final thought is I made the mistake of purchasing Helldivers 2, and that it is incredibly fun. It's a very, very fun video game. I've got a plan for tomorrow night for a friend of mine and I to just be degenerate and play video games all night. So I'm really excited for that. Otherwise, I'm just, you know, really enjoying Outlaws of Thunder Junction story. Like, y'all get in our Discord and talk about it with us because we've been going absolutely buck wild over here. And now, Natalie or Harless, do either of you have a final thought you want to share?
I have a final thought. One of the things that we edit out of our podcast on a weekly basis is our cats. And I don't know that many of our listeners know how involved our cats are in our podcast recording. I have two cats. They're both black kitties. They're not kitties anymore. They're like four, but I call them kitties. Belmont.
They're always kitties.
They're always perfect, dumb little babies. And literally every time I record, right now it's happening, every time I record a podcast, my cat knows. I don't know how she knows, but she comes in my room, and if I shut the door, she'll scratch like very loudly, like ruin the recording loudly. And I have to like let her in. And Natalie also has two cats who are very vocal. So the unknown members of the Magic Story podcast are very much, very much there, but you'll never hear them because our editor is so good.
I don't know if you all heard it, but I had one of my cats just come in and say hi to you all just a few seconds ago. So it was like you summoned her, Harless.
She even knows me now.
I guess final thought is Outlaws of Thunder Junction has made me appreciate a unknown fact that many people do not know about me, but I actually used to own a horse way back when, and it has made me think back to my horse that I have missed for over a decade. It makes me want to get back in the saddle again. And I hope I get to, literally get back in the saddle again. But it's this story has just been so like personally relatable for me on so many levels. I hope you all have been enjoying and get to continue to enjoy Outlaws of Thunder Junction. It's just been so much fun.
What Natalie's saying is that she is, in fact, a horse girl.
I am, in fact, a horse girl.
I had a horse growing up as well, but no one believed me. So the joke is that I had an imaginary horse, but she was real. Her name was Candy, and you couldn't ride her, but you could. I fed her her apples. I fed her horses. That's incorrect. I fed her apples all the time as a child, and I was like so scared of her, so in awe. We had like cattle and stuff too, but Candy was the real star. My team at Wizards literally does not believe me. Like they give me crap about it all the time. They're like, oh, you're an imaginary horse. And I'm like, no. And the worst part is I do not have a picture of me with Candy. So I cannot prove.
Convenient.
She's real.
There's also no proof of this, but I definitely attended a horse camp during the summer a couple of years in a row when I was a young child. But I know what it's like to ride a horse and to feed them apples and also clean out their stalls, which is terrible, and have them step on your foot, yeah. Which is scary. Horses, beautiful, wonderful, majestic animals, also kind of terrifying, just to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Like, as a child, looking up at this horse that's like four of me and being like, you could just step on me at any moment and I'd be dead.
And they will. They will step on you. I am so thankful that I had steel toe boots because they definitely went after my feet. Yeah.
I have to say, I never had to clean out a stable because Candy was a free roaming chicken. She was a free roaming horse. She was a free range horse. So I never had to deal with that. So I really got all the upside of owning a horse and none of the downside because I was a child and no one was going to make me go out in the field and shovel horse poop. Idyllic childhood, really.
See, I'm from Philadelphia, and I have no interactions with horses in my backstory, so this is all very unrelatable right now.
Well, that's your homework. Go take a horseback riding class. Drive out in the suburbs and take a horseback riding class. It's so fun. They are very scary, but they're really majestic and really beautiful. There's a place where I grew up where you can hike to see wild horses.
Oh.
And it's amazing. Cool. You can't get anywhere near them. They will kill you. Like, you will be dead. But, and they run, right? Like, if you get close to them, they're like, you're not my friend. Get out of here. But if you just kind of stay your distance, they'll let you just watch them. And they're so beautiful. And it's so cool. I grew up in Appalachia. So they're, like, on the mountain. It's
beautiful. I'm from Philadelphia. I think I could take a horse. They're not that tough.
That's a very Philadelphia thing of you to say, I feel.
I can drive a car. It can. That makes me better.
If you too think you could fight a horse, I don't know how to segue this for you, Lorelai, but you're gonna have to figure it out.
We're terrible at segue. This is okay. You do a podcast for 6 years and you think things are always gonna run so smoothly, and then you realize you run out of good segues into the give us money on Patreon part, and then 6 years later you're doing bits to cover your ass because you don't have good segues. So if you head to patreon.com/lamorthoscast, you can help support the show and keep us running for 6 years, which is crazy. Your support keeps the show going, lets us do cool stuff like release episodes every week and like do live panels at MagicCon sometimes. Go to YouTube and watch our panel, Scoundrels or Wanted Scoundrels of the Multiverse, from MagicCon Chicago. It's really fun. Everyone who supports us on Patreon also gets access to our Discord community, where Vorthoses from around the world are enjoying Thunder Junction's story right now. We're, like we said earlier, very close to preview season, so we're about to be talking about all those cards as they come out every day. And we have a wonderful community of folks. We would love for you to be part of it. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Vorthos Cast.
Have a magical day.